ক্যান্সার হয় আজকে যাওয়ার নেই। আবু রহমান এরা সাহেবজি বাবুজি ওর যাতে আয়েঙ্গে বিকানি রেসা ইয়েসা ফার্স্ট রেসা ও চিসমা পিছা তোমাদের না এসাচ্ছেন আমাদের সঙ্গে আমরা বিভাগের বাদ্রাসে কাঁচা পশুর জন্য দালু কি বাড়না পিছাম আবু এক্সপ্লেন few words why who is Mr. Christopher John Jurgens. When I was doing the research on the internet, as I do every Saturdays and Sundays, I do research through different libraries. I met a book named Jewish Genocide of the Armenian Christians. I've never heard that title before in my life. I was amazed somebody is saying Jewish Genocide of the Armenians. Of course I knew who committed the genocide of the Armenians. But I didn't know it was going to be written in English. And when I started reading in the PDF files on the internet, it was 100% accurate, historically, facts. And I wanted to call Mr. Christopher and ask him about himself. When I asked him, he said he's from Norway. He was born in the United States, lived in Chicago, and he's a historian. He has been researching about Albert Einstein. He has written a book about it. And while he was writing the book on Albert Einstein, he ran into the Armenian genocide and who were the perpetrators, who were the powers behind the Armenian genocide. And when we invited him, he was happy to be here, and he's happy to be here to talk to us about his research, and I can assure you, the research he has done, it is 100% factual, it is 100% correct, and thank God for somebody who can tell us the truth. Thank you very much. And now we will call to the podium Mr. Christopher John Jurgens.
Scholarly materials that aided me in my research. I have been invited here tonight to discuss with you a series of crimes that were committed against the Armenian people, primarily from 1894 forward. Historically, these crimes have been attributed to the Young Turks as if the Young Turks were Turkish Muslims. In point of fact, the Young Turks were composed primarily of secret Jews and open Jews from the city of Salonika, whose aim was to destroy the Turkish Empire and put in order to establish a Jewish state in Palestine and eventually throughout Panarabia. This has been an ongoing process, both the genocide of the Armenian Christians and the process of Zionism in overtaking the Middle East continues to this day. I have prepared a series of slides which I hope help explain what I would like to teach you tonight and to put a face on the criminals who committed these crimes so that you can come to understand the reality of what really happened and also come to grips with the cover-up and the false blaming of other people for what actually happened in order to establish a Zionist state in Palestine. I will go through the slides and explain them briefly, and then I will show a prepared presentation which has an audio file attached to it. After that, I will again go through a series of slides and explain briefly, and then show another audio presentation. Afterwards, I'll summarize what I've shown, and there will be written questions submitted which I'll try to answer. So I would like to open by introducing you to the Young Turks and identifying their ethnic origins and their religious beliefs. And I will try to explain to you why they were motivated to commit genocide against the Armenians. In 1910, the Young Turk government was firmly entrenched in power. One of the first things that they did when they overthrew the Sultan in 1908 was try to ensure that there would be no counter-revolution against their revolution. In 1909, the Young Turks faced the counter-revolution, and the Sultan of Turkey almost came back to power. One of the methods that the Young Turks used to discredit the Sultan was to provoke him to massacre Christians. They had firm control over the press in the Ottoman Empire, and they utilized that control to generate paranoia among Turks and Kurds that the Armenian Christians and missionaries from England and America were attempting to convert all Muslims to Christianity. In April of 1909, when the Sultan threatened to return to power, the Young Turks provoked the massacre, chiefly in Adana. This outraged many people who realized the true motivations of the Young Turks. One of those who was outraged was the British ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Sir Gerard Lowther. He sent several reports to the British Foreign Office in which he identified who the Young Turks were, their ethnic origins, their religious beliefs, and why it is that they were massacring Christians. His reports were published in British documents in a series of red books. So these are historical facts that are indisputable and are very well known. Talat Bai rose to power from being a postal clerk. He was essentially a nobody. But he became associated with Freemasonry, he made powerful friends, and he became a member of the Committee of Union and Progress. The Committee of Union and Progress organized the Young Turk Revolution, and they maintained their power after the revolution as a secret government behind the official government. Talat Bey was a member of the Committee of Union and Progress, and he became the Minister of Interior of the Young Turk Ottoman Empire government. His ethnic origins were that he was a crypto-Jew. Crypto-Jews are Jews who pretend to be of a different ethnicity and of a different religion, but secretly at home they practice Judaism. There have been many reasons why crypto-Jews have done this. For example, in Spain they were forced to do it because the Spanish said either convert to Christianity or leave the empire. So they pretended to convert to Christianity, but at home they secretly practiced Judaism. Talat Pasha is most notorious.
Excuse me, Amen. Is it okay if I translate a little bit?
Difference between Norwegians and Armenians. Talat Pasha is most notorious because he gave the exact orders compelling the Kurds and the Turks to exterminate the Armenians. His orders were often ignored. The Muslims resented what he was telling them to do. Many Muslims tried to shelter the Armenians. He tried to give the Muslims incentives for killing the Armenians. He promised them their property. He promised them their homes. And eventually they even offered payments for the mass murder of Armenians. He was eventually shot dead by a Taschnack revolutionary in Berlin in 1921. He was tried in absentia and was one of the many crypto Jews who was found guilty of the Armenian Genocide. He was a member, as I said, of the Committee of Union and Progress. He became Minister of the Interior and was the head of what was known as the Triumvirate, which consisted of Talat Bey, Enver Pasha, and Jamal Pasha. He was heavily involved in Freemasonry, and he became the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodge of Constantinople. Javid Bey came from a very old crypto-Jewish family. He is a direct descendant of a very famous false Jewish messiah. He became Minister of Finance and was also a member of the Committee of Union and Progress. He was an ardent Zionist, and he was also a Freemason. He arranged the loans through Paris with the major Jewish banking houses of Europe. He financed the Young Turks. He ran them into debts by encouraging them in military adventures they could not win. One of the purposes of the Young Turks was to destroy the Ottoman Empire. They sought to destroy the Ottoman Empire so that they could partition it into small, ethnically segregated nations. Chiefly, they sought to create a Jewish state. Dr. Nazim was another famous crypto-Jewish Young Turk. He helped to organize the mass murders. He issued orders, and he publicized negative things about the Armenians and tried to create a psychological environment where the Turks and the Kurds felt compelled to kill the Armenians. He was convicted, together with Talat Pasha, Enver Pasha, and Jamal Pasha, for committing the Armenian Genocide, and he was sentenced to death. Later on, when the Armenians finally were able to establish an independent Armenian Republic, another very famous crypto-Jew from Salonika came to power. His name was Mustafa Kemal. He renamed himself the father of the Turks, Ataturk. He too came from a very famous crypto-Jewish family and claimed to be a direct descendant of Shabbatai Tzevi, the original false Jewish messiah, who claimed in the year 1666 that he was the king of the Jews and restore the Jews to Palestine. Ataturk destroyed the young Armenian independent republic. He worked together with Bolshevik Jews to sandwich Armenia and to crush it and to again enslave the Armenians in the Soviet Union. Here you can see Shabbatai Tzevi, the false Jewish messiah of whom I spoke. You can also see another famous false Jewish messiah, Jacob Frank. These Jews believe that souls can be reincarnated. They especially believe that the soul of King David is transmitted from one Jewish messiah to the next through the process of reincarnation. Shabbatai Tzevi's soul supposedly passed on to Baruch Yah Russo. Baruch Yah Russo began a sect in Salonika, Greece, of crypto-Jews who pretended to be Muslims, but were secretly Jews. Their primary goal was to establish a Jewish state so that the Jewish people could finally say that we have been restored to Jerusalem. That is the objective of the Jewish Messiah. There were also Jews involved who were not crypto-Jews, but most of them were also from Salonika. Emmanuel Carrasco was a very famous lawyer who won many important cases because of his connections to Freemasonry. He was not considered an honest person. He was considered very deceitful, and he was very well connected with financiers and helped to organize the Young Turk Revolution. He was the primary motive force behind the Young Turks, and he was the leader of the Committee of Union and Progress, which was the secret government behind the official government. When the Young Turks overthrew the Sultan, he presented the Sultan with the order of deposition. He transmitted the Sultan to a prison where the Sultan was held by Jewish bankers. He founded a Masonic lodge in Salonika, which had its roots in Italian Freemasonry. He made himself Grand Master of this lodge and named it Macedonia Resorta Masonic Lodge of Salonika. I'm now going to go through a series of slides which will become part of a presentation I'm going to show you with an attached audio file. But as I do this, I have the ability to highlight things, and perhaps I can make it easier for you to understand what you'll see in the actual presentation. This is the first time I've ever made a PowerPoint presentation. Please forgive me. I sometimes have a raspy voice, and I hope it's not too boring. Here you see Ataturk. Here is Talat Pasha. Well, let me run. This is Talat Pasha, the man who issued the orders of extermination in 1915. His orders were very explicit. He demanded that every Armenian be killed. Babies, old men, every Armenian. This is Ataturk. This is a field of butchered Armenians. The primary motive force behind the Young Turks was to break apart the Turkish Empire so that they could establish a Jewish state in Palestine. They had been working on this for centuries. The Sultan did not want to give up Palestine because the Sultan was a religious leader as well as a political leader, and Jerusalem was a very important city to the Muslims. It contains the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Jewish prophecy calls for the Jews to rebuild the Temple of Solomon, which must be rebuilt on the site of the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Muslims have a belief that something similar to the Antichrist will arise and a Jewish king will take over Palestine and rebuild this temple and destroy their holy sites. They call this Jewish king Al-Dajjal. It is virtually identical to the Christian belief in the Antichrist. The Jewish banking house of Rothschilds sought to become the king of the Jews in those express terms, and they sought to buy Palestine from the Sultan. The initial massacres, which are known as the Hamidian massacres, after Sultan Hamid Abdul II, which took place in 1894 and 1896, were instigated again by the Jewish press, which lied to the Muslim people and told them that the Christians were out to perpetrate a revolution and to convert all Muslims to Christianity. They taught the Muslims that the Pope sought to take Jerusalem and turn it into a Christian city and make it the capital of the Christian Church. At the beginning of the 1800s, the Turkish Empire was vast. It controlled much of Eastern Europe, North Africa, and Southwestern Asia. Palestine is here. The Suez Canal is here. Constantinople, another important city for Byzantine Christians and for the Greeks, is here. The Russian Empire had always sought to gain access to the Mediterranean Sea through Serbia. This became a source of tensions between the Ottoman Empire and the Russian Empire. Another source of tensions was the fact that many of the Balkan peoples were Christians. The Zionist Jews knew that if they were to kill Armenians, it would outrage Christians in the West, and that these Christians would be provoked to fight against the Ottoman Empire, and that this could be used to spark a world war. The objective was to create a world war in the hopes that at the end of the world war, there would be a peace conference. At this peace conference, after the Turkish Empire had been destroyed, they planned to have a Jewish delegation which would make a petition for a Jewish state in Palestine. They also plan to make the world so weary of war and so disgusted with war that nations would begin to surrender their sovereignty to a world government. They did this with the Zionist-controlled League of Nations. The League of Nations was notable by the fact that most of the delegates were of Jewish descent. In the 1870s, England had a Jewish prime minister named Benjamin Disraeli. Benjamin Disraeli was an agent of the Rothschild banking house. Disraeli and Rothschild planned to set up the British in Egypt, which would guarantee them that they would have an army which would support Jewish colonization of Palestine. They brought the British into Egypt by purchasing the Suez Canal. The pretext that they gave for this purchase was that the United Kingdom would then have a shipping lane through the Mediterranean Sea, through the Suez, through the Red Sea, to its colonies in India, and across to Hong Kong and China. England was not the first nation that the Jewish bankers proposed this to. They had earlier proposed the same plan to the French. And the plan was initially created by an American Jew named Judge Noah in the 1840s. Again, we have the Russians who sought their Slavic allies to gain access to the Mediterranean Sea so that they would have an alternative route to exploit the wealth of Asia. At this time, the Russian Empire was very powerful and very wealthy, and there was direct competition between the Tsar and between the Rothschilds and the Sultan of Turkey. This erupted into the Crimean War in the 1850s. After the Crimean War, there was a war called the Russo-Turkish War. This war is very important in the history of the Armenian Genocide. At the conclusion of this war, the Russians were in a very strong position. Article 16 of the Treaty of San Stefano, which was agreed to at the end of this war, made the Russians the protectors of the Armenian people. Had that article been enforced, the Armenian Genocide would not have taken place. The British Jews, Rothschild, and I don't mean all British Jews, I mean those involved with the family of Rothschild, including Benjamin Disraeli, destroyed the Treaty of San Stefano deliberately. They wanted to destroy the Russian Empire, and they wanted to destroy the Turkish Empire, and they wanted to create perpetual conflict between the two.
The Armenians were duped into starting their own revolutionary movements based on the Kabbalistic Jewish Marxist revolutionary model. Jewish subversives whispered into the Sultan's ear that the Christians were out to destroy the Ottoman Empire and to convert all Muslims to Christianity. The Jewish press pointed an accusatory finger at the Armenians and Christian missionaries from England and America so as to drive a wedge between Christians and Muslims and to provoke the Sultan to violence against Christians. Jews used their press to promote resentment towards Christians in the Ottoman Empire. The young Turk Zionists desperately wanted to discredit the Sultan and to bring the Turkish Empire into war with Europeans, the Russian Empire, and America. They knew that if the Sultan were to attack Christians, that they would be able to use their control over the press to either foment hatred against the Sultan and Islam and the Christian nations, or to extort the sale of Palestine from the Sultan in return for favorable press in the Jewish-controlled media of the day. In the period from 1894 to 1896, Sultan Abdul Hamid II ordered the Hamidian massacres of Armenian Christians. The leader of the Zionist movement, Theodore Herzl, approached the Sultan and offered him a deal. If the Sultan agreed to sell Palestine to the Rothschilds, the Jewish bankers would fix the empire's financial crisis,
which shifted that protection mostly to Eastern Europeans who didn't much care about the Armenians. Article 61 was never enforced. Later British prime ministers, including David Lloyd George, attributed the Armenian genocide to the fact that the Armenians had been betrayed by the Rothschilds and by the Israeli with the Treaty of Berlin. Here you see a picture of Benjamin Disraeli. Again, as I just discussed, the Treaty of San Stefano was changed to the Treaty of Berlin. One of the ways that they sought to destroy the Turkish Empire was to bring the Sultan into disrepute. They whispered in his ear that the Armenians were out to get him, and they made him impotent and paranoid so that his cabinet and his ministry couldn't function. The Armenians were the elite intellectuals of the Ottoman Empire. They were the intelligentsia. Many of the ministers of the Ottoman Empire were Armenians. Many of the bankers were Armenians. Armenians had wonderful universities, great professors doing wonderful scholarly research, and they kept the empire alive, and the empire was actually thriving. The Jewish bankers were covertly destroying the empire by running up its debts, by making it maintain an army it didn't need. Had they not done that, the Ottoman Empire would have continued to thrive. They instigated the Sultan's massacres against the Armenians in the period from 1894 to 1896. Note that this is the exact same period when Pinsker and Theodor Herzl began to publicize the Zionist movement. The Zionist movement was not popular among Jews. The vast majority of Jews laughed at Herzl and ridiculed him. The vast majority of the Jewish press also ridiculed Herzl. As I discussed, another obstacle that the Rothschilds faced were the theologies of Islam and the theologies of Christendom. From the dispersal of the Jews in 70 AD by Titus, and the development of Christian theology has always opposed the idea that the Jews should reconstitute a nation in Palestine. The heavenly kingdom of Christendom is supposed to be not of this earth, but of heaven. And Christian theologians have always opposed the idea that the Jews should be restored to Palestine. That began to change with the Protestant movement, which was instigated by Kabbalistic Jews who wanted to pit some Christians against other Christians and created new theologies, including the theologies of Christian Zionism and the theology of the Rapture, which calls for the apocalyptic war and promises all Christians who instigate this apocalyptic war that they will be lifted up into heaven and will not have to suffer the misery that they impose upon other people. Here you see the five sons of Ansel Bauer, the original Rothschild. One of these sons was meant to become king of the Jews and to rule it from Palestine. Again, all that stood in their way was the Ottoman Empire and the Jewish people themselves. Here you see Theodor Herzl, who published a highly influential book in 1896 called The Jewish State. Again, note the correlation between these years, primarily 1895 and 1896. When Theodor Herzl was organizing the Zionist movement, the Sultan was committing atrocities against Armenian Christians. These atrocities enabled Herzl to make a deal with the Sultan. Herzl sent a man named Nevlinsky to the Sultan and proposed a deal. He said that if you sell Palestine to the Rothschilds, we will use our Jewish control of the press to cover up the atrocities you have committed against Armenian Christians. If you do not agree to this deal, we will savage you in the press, and we will bring the Western world against you. We will cut off all your trade to Europe, and we will bankrupt you. Herzl received help from Jews in the British press. Other Jews opposed Herzl. Many other Jews opposed Herzl. Many other Jews were ashamed of these massacres and these deals that he was trying to organize. But the most powerful Jews of Europe were the Rothschilds, and what they wanted to happen, happened. As we saw, the primary criminals responsible for the Armenian genocide were the Young Turks, and they were neither young nor Turkish. They were mostly Jewish Freemasons from Salonika. In 1911, the London Times began to publish a series of correspondence from their Vienna correspondent and from their Constantinople correspondent, in which the London Times made an appeal to the Jewish communities of Europe to oppose the massacres that the young Turkish Jews were committing against Armenians. Jewish leaders ridiculed this appeal and accused the correspondents of Jew-baiting and anti-Semitism. This was another terrible milestone in the Armenian genocide, because if people had taken these warnings seriously, the genocide of 1.5 million people in 1915 would not have happened. Again, when Bolshevik Jews in the Soviet Union began to mass murder the intelligentsia in order to ensure that there would never be a counter-revolution against them, there were correspondents in the London Times who warned the Jews to oppose this. This was the primary reason that Nazism evolved. In order, Hitler proposed the idea that he would protect Europe from this Bolshevism. Again, there were tens of millions of people murdered by Bolshevik Jews in the Soviet Union, and these murders would not have taken place if the warnings issued in the London Times had been heeded. Perhaps I should read one paragraph of the initial correspondence which started this debate in the London Times in 1911. It is a well-known fact that the Salonika Committee was formed under Masonic auspices with the help of the Jews and Dernmes, or crypto-Jews of Turkey, whose headquarters are at Salonika and whose organization took, even under Abdulhamid, a Masonic form. Jews like Emmanuel Carasso, Salem, Sassoon, Farji, Neslav, and Derme or crypto-Jews like Javid Bai and the Balji family took an influential part both in the organization of the committee and in the deliberations of the central body at Salonika. These facts, which are known to every government in Europe, are also known throughout Turkey and the Balkans, where an increasing tendency is noticeable to saddle the Jews and Dernmes with responsibility for the sanguinary blunders which the committee has made. Those sanguinary blunders were mass murders of Armenian Christians. Greeks were also mass murdered, as were Assyrians. The letter continues with the appeal I described that the Jews in the Western world should condemn these massacres. Okay, I'll now show the presentation I made. I believe it's about 7 minutes long.
The following presentation explores the history of the Jewish genocide of Armenian Christians. In 1915, the Committee of Union and Progress ordered the extermination of the Armenian people in the Ottoman Empire. The ethnic origins of the leaders of this organization and their true motives for mass murdering the Armenians have heretofore been a poorly kept secret. In the 1800s, the Turkish Empire controlled much of North Africa, southeastern Europe, and southwestern Asia. A few of the nations under its control were Christian nations, and the formerly Christian capital of Constantinople was in Turkish hands, as was Jerusalem. The British, French, and Germans sought trade routes through this region to their colonies. In particular, the British sought a shipping route to India and China. The Russian Empire desired a route to the Mediterranean Sea through their Slavic allies in Serbia. The Russians, being Eastern Christians, felt a kinship with the Armenian and Greek Christians in the Ottoman Empire. These conflicting interests resulted in what was known as the Eastern Question. In the 1850s, the struggle between British, Russian, and Turkish commercial interests erupted into the Crimean War. Then, in the 1870s, the Russo-Turkish War was fought. In the same period, the British were ruled by a Jewish prime minister named Benjamin Disraeli. It is well known that Disraeli worked for the famous Jewish banking house of Rothschild. He purchased the Suez Canal through the Rothschild Bank in violation of English law. He then proposed that the best means for England to secure its interests in Egypt was for Jews to colonize Palestine. The Rothschilds also had large commercial interests in India and China and sought a shipping lane through the Suez. The Russians were in competition with the Rothschilds to control the wealth of Asia and the trade routes to Europe. As time passed and the Turkish Empire lost its European and African holdings, it too turned towards the east. In the 1870s, after the Russo-Turkish War was fought and the Turks were defeated, the nations agreed upon the Treaty of San Stefano. The Treaty of San Stefano guaranteed the Armenian Christians Russian protection from the Turks. Disraeli, working for Rothschild, sought to undermine both the Russians and the Armenians and change this Treaty of San Stefano with a new treaty, the Treaty of Berlin, which took away Russian protection from the Armenians, thus setting the stage for the Armenian genocide. Disraeli and Rothschild were what is known as Zionists, Jews who sought to colonize Palestine with European Jews. The Turkish Empire stood in their way. They knew that they would have to destroy it in order to take Palestine from the Arabs. From the early 1800s onward, the Rothschild family had sought to buy Palestine from the sultans of the Ottoman Empire. As religious, as well as political leaders, the sultans were reluctant to hand over the sacred city of Jerusalem to the Jews. Though the sultans often entertained the offers which the Rothschilds put forward to buy Palestine, it appears that other obstacles than the sultans stood in the way of the Rothschilds' plans to purchase Palestine. The Arabs would not give up their land without a fight. The theologies of Islam and of Christendom prophesy the rise of a Jewish Al-Dajjal, or Antichrist, who will restore the Jews to Palestine and attempt to rule the world from Jerusalem. Muslims, like Christians, are duty-bound to fight against this Antichrist. The Rothschilds were determined to pit the Christians and Muslims against one another, which battles would cripple both peoples and leave the Jews standing in Jerusalem. The Rothschilds were proven masters at instigating wars and revolutions. They had decided to destroy the Turkish Empire. Once the empire was ruined through revolution and war, the Rothschilds knew that there would be an opportunity to partition the empire into small, ethnically segregated nation-states. The Rothschilds knew that if they were able to provoke a devastating world war, that there would have to be a peace conference at the end of this war, at which the Jews could petition for the formation of a Jewish nation in Palestine. In order to provoke this world war, the Jewish bankers sponsored revolutionary Jews in the Ottoman Empire. These Jews joined the Young Turk movement, which was patterned after Giuseppe Mazzini's Young Turk, and pressed Jews under the control of the Rothschilds would cover up the crime of the massacres. If the Sultan would not agree to this deal, the Jewish bankers would savage the Sultan's reputation in the press and bring his empire into war and bankruptcy. They would overthrow it and then partition it. The Sultan had stepped into their trap and left himself vulnerable to their blackmail.
Now there's a second part there's a second part to this presentation. I can go through the slides and try to explain them, or I can simply show the presentation. What do you recommend, Donovan? Just show. Okay.
In the first part of this presentation, I explained why the Jews massacred the Christians in the Ottoman Empire. The first phase of the Armenian Genocide, from 1894 to 1896, served to discredit the Sultan and weaken the empire, leaving it ripe for revolution. It also enabled Zionist Jews to blackmail the Sultan. The next phase of the genocide, in 1909, prevented a counter-revolution against the Jewish Young Turks. Further mass murders of Christians provoked the Balkan Wars and then the First World War. Zionist Jews needed the First World War in order to break up the Russian Empire. This freed up the Jews in the Pale of Settlement so that they could then move to Palestine. The First World War also ruined the Ottoman Empire, which allowed the Zionist Jews to partition it and to make a petition for the formation of a Jewish nation at the League of Nations. The Jewish factors created the League of Nations for this very purpose. Jewish leaders murdered Christians in the Ottoman Empire in order to pit Christians against Muslims and provoke a world war, which would leave the Jews standing in Jerusalem. There were also other reasons why the Jews wanted to commit genocide against the Armenians. As would later happen in the Jewish Bolshevik revolutions in Russia and Hungary, Jewish revolutionaries wanted to mass murder the intelligentsia and thereby guarantee that the empire would fail because it had lost its leading citizens. They wanted to kill off the smartest and most successful people, and thereby prevent any counter-revolution. This would also ensure the death of the Ottoman Empire. The Armenians kept the Ottoman Empire alive. They were the leading citizens of the empire, the professors, the bankers, the doctors, the lawyers, ministers, etc. By killing off the Armenians, the Jews were killing off the Ottoman Empire. Eliminating the Armenians also gave the Jews the opportunity to take the Armenians' place as the leaders of the empire and to steal the Armenians' wealth and property. The Jews planned to move millions of Russian Jews into vacant Armenian homes and to take over orphaned Armenian businesses. The Jews believed that the Jewish God had commanded them to kill each and every Armenian before he would let them take over the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, the land which is known as Greater Israel, and which includes Egypt, Palestine, Syria, Jordan, northern Saudi Arabia, and much of what is today Iraq. Crypto-Jews are Jews who pretend to be non-Jews in order to infiltrate and subvert non-Jewish societies, religions, and governments. Many of the Young Turks were crypto-Jews, including Talat Pasha, Javed Bai, and Dr. Nazi. The Book of Esther in the Hebrew Bible tells the story of a Jewish woman who pretends that she is not Jewish in order to marry the king of Persia and corrupt the Persian government. Her name was originally Hadassah, but she changed it to Esther, which means that which is hidden. Once in power, she used her position as queen and the power of the Persian government to commit genocide against the Amalekites. Jews around the world celebrate this genocide once every year at the festival of Purim, which is the Jews' favorite holiday. In 1492, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella ordered all Jews in the Spanish Empire to either leave the empire or convert to Catholicism. Many Jews pretended to convert, but continued to practice Judaism in secret. They were known as conversos or moranos. They could often be spotted because they gave the appearance of being the most ardently religious Catholics in the community and married mostly amongst themselves. In 1666, Shabbatai Zevi declared that he was the Messiah of the Jews. The Messiah of the Jews is supposed to restore the Jews to Palestine and bring on the War of the Apocalypse. The Sultan of Turkey seized Shabbatai Zevi and told him that he had a choice to either convert to Islam or die. Shabbatai Zevi pretended to convert to Islam, as did many of his followers, and from that day forward, they set about to destroy the Turkish Empire from within and without. By pretending to be Muslims, they were able to infiltrate and subvert Turkish society, government, and the Muslim faith itself. Shabbatai Zevi's followers believed that he was God. They also believed that his soul passed through reincarnation to Baruch Yah Russo, who founded a sect of these secret or crypto-Jews in Salonika, a sect known as the Dernmei. The soul of God, the soul of Shabbatai Zevi, then supposedly passed on to Jacob Frank. Frank pretended to be both a Muslim and a Catholic in order to destroy the Catholic Church and Islam from within. He received a great deal of money from Jewish financiers and had millions of Jewish followers. Dernmei crypto-Jews worship the Lurian Jewish Kabbalah, which teaches them that they must destroy all governments of non-Jews and all non-Jewish religions through revolution and war. They also believe that it is good to do evil, and that by destroying the human race and the earth, they can provoke God to begin the end times of Jewish prophecy, where God will create a new earth populated only with Jews who will rule the world from Jerusalem. Ataturk was a direct descendant of Shabbatai Zevi. Javid Bai was a direct descendant of the family of Baruch Yah Russo. These crypto-Jews who believe that it is good to do evil mass murdered 1.5 million Armenians as a human sacrifice to their Jewish God, which they believed would bring the Jews to Palestine.
There is a Jewish mythology which is very relevant to Armenians. I have a series of slides, but I'll just discuss it. In the Hebrew Bible, when the Jews were fleeing Egypt in the Exodus to the Promised Land, one force attacked them from the rear. That force was ruled by King Amalek. God was outraged at King Amalek and made the Jews swear that they would exterminate him and all his people. God also warned the Jews that this would be an ongoing war from generation to generation, and that the Jews would only be restored to Palestine if they were to completely exterminate the Amalekites. This became an ongoing theme in Judaism. The story of Esther is another story of the genocide of Amalekites. In yet another story in the book of Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 15, King Saul again committed genocide against the Amalekites, but he left the Amalekite king, King Agag, alive. He did this so that he could sacrifice King Agag to God, But God was outraged at King Saul and took away his throne. He again made the Jews promise that if they wanted to go to Palestine and stay in Palestine, they would have to exterminate the Amalekites. This mythology again appears in the Jewish Talmud, where the Jews are taught that they have to do three things when they are restored to Palestine. They have to anoint the Jewish Messiah, they have to rebuild Solomon's temple, and they have to exterminate the Amalekites. In the Byzantine Empire, a mythology evolved which stigmatized the Armenians as the Amalekites. The Jews began to call the Amalekites a word which means to exterminate. Jews in Europe, at the festival of Purim, which celebrates the extermination of the Amalekites, would hire Armenians and Greeks to pose as the Amalekites and then pretend to hang them in part of their festival. This took on a contemporary significance in the Ottoman Empire. In the earlier 1800s, whenever Jews were persecuted, the Armenians were one of the few to come to their defense. And yet when the Armenians were persecuted, the Jews turned a blind eye to it and said that we would not defend the Amalekites. Jews would also point out where the Amalekites lived when the massacres took place, where the Armenians lived, whom they characterized as the Amalekites. This is a very significant racist mythology which continues today. Jews believe that the Armenian people are this perpetual enemy which is identified in the Hebrew Bible, and that one of the reasons that Zionism has not been successful is because they had failed to exterminate the Amalekites. I suggest to the Armenians to take this issue seriously, as insane as it is and as insane as it sounds. There's a good deal of scholarly research on this subject, and a book I would recommend to you all is a book called Reckless Rights by Eliot Horowitz. In this book, he gives primary quotations from Jews who identify the Armenians as the Amalekites and associate them with the Jewish racist mythology that the Armenian people are an evil people who prevent the Jews from gaining all of Greater Israel from the Nile River to the Euphrates. This issue is also discussed in the book The Banality of Indifference, which I also recommend. There were many articles in the late 1800s where the Jews themselves identified the Armenians as Amalekites and encouraged the massacres and celebrated the massacres, just as they celebrate the massacre of the Amalekites at the Festival of Purim. Now, I don't know how we're going to proceed with the question period. Shifted that protection mostly to Eastern Europeans who didn't much care about it. You will note that seemingly inexplicably, the Israeli government, Jewish organizations in America, and Jewish politicians in America have attempted to discourage governments from recognizing the Armenian genocide. I suggest to you that you now know why. But I also warn you about alternative Zionist Jews who seek recognition of the genocide. Just as they used and perpetrated the genocide to drive a wedge between Christendom and Islam, they are again trying to destroy the Islamic peoples by pitting the Christians against them. They are again shaming the memory of all the Armenians who were massacred and blaming their massacre on Muslims so that Christians will come to hate Muslims. You are being used as a political tool to instigate more and more wars against the Muslim people, and you are also being used to dehumanize Muslims with the mythology that Islam promotes genocide and that Arab and Turkish people and the Kurds
are by their nature genetically defective and seek to commit genocide against Christians. So I urge you to seek recognition of the genocide, but to be wary of some of those. Obviously, many have genuine motives of what they're up to, and if they're trying to promote the interests of Zionism to create more and more wars in the Middle East, which will favor Israeli interests. I also advise you not to continue to stubbornly fight the Turks, but to try to teach them this history as well, and to instigate a rapprochement, because Armenia as a nation is being destroyed economically and demographically. Armenia is a landlocked nation, and its economy cannot survive if it is at perpetual war with its neighbors. Armenians should seek to come to terms with the Azerbaijanis and the Turks and realize who their common enemy is, who is constantly pitting you against one another.
Հասարակություն իրավարտին ասած, հիմա պահն է անում, որ գրավոր հարցումներ ունեմ մեր անդամներուն գրնան փոխանցել, որպեսի հոսքերեն, և մենք մեր արկելի դասախոսին թարգմանենք կամ ներկայացնենք գրված երկուվային դարձ։ Բայց մենք այս երեկոյի հիշատակն ուզենք տալ պարոն Ջրկնձին, որ այս չափ երկար ճանապարհ եկավ Շիկագոյի մինչև հոս։ Մենք ուզենք Վիլյամ Սարոյանի խոսքով, Վիլյամ Սարոյանի նշանավոր խոսքերով այս ժողովուրդին իրեն հիշատակ դնել, որ գսե
should like to see any power of the world destroy this race, this small tribe of unimportant people, whose wars have all been fought and lost, whose structures have crumbled, literature is unread, music is unheard, and prayers are no more answered. Go ahead, destroy Armenia. See if you can do it. Send them into the desert without bread or water. Burn their homes and churches. Then see if they will not laugh, sing, and pray again. For when two of them meet anywhere in the world, see if they will not create a new Armenia. Vilyam Sarayan. Question. Aren't you afraid to go against this? What do you think? Is it possible one day to bring all these secret missions of Jewish Zionism to the surface?
I am afraid, but I am not afraid of the threats that I receive from Zionists. What scares me is that the Zionists will be successful in their plans to create a third world war. Zionists are making many promises to people in the Middle East and people in Armenia and Turkey that if they help the Zionists to create this third world war, that at the conclusion of this third world war, there will again be peace conferences. This is the exact same tactic they utilized to instigate the first world war.
For example, the Kurds are being promised that if they instigate a third world war, that at the conclusion of this war in the peace conferences, they will be given a nation of Kurdistan. You also see the balkanization of Iraq. You see revolutionary groups in Iran being provoked to disrupt the government and to bring it into war. And that is what scares me.
Thank you. Any questions from the public? If they are familiar with Մենք բոլոր բոլորը մենք դասի մենք դեսակի քրակրություն չեն գրել, բայց դե մասին երբ որ դեսնեմ նույնի հետ չէ, բիդի տացին գարտանը։ Have you been contacted by any Jewish Zionist protesting the good you?
Yes. The question is, have I been contacted by any Zionists who protest the book I wrote? The answer is no. Zionists are in a quandary. They don't know how to respond to what I've said because everything that I've said I've documented with historical facts that are indisputable. There can be arguments over my logical conclusions drawn from those facts, and there can be reasonable disagreements, and I would welcome any Zionist Jews to pose their questions to me, and I would attempt to answer them. But it hasn't happened. I have received threats against my life, and I have received vicious personal attacks and smear campaigns, but I have received no substantive criticism of anything I've written on this issue. Jews are by no means a monolithic people. If you have two Jews, you'll have five different opinions. It is wrong to assume that all Jews think alike. There will always be Jews who will encourage what I'm doing, and there will be Jews who have political motivations for trying to discourage what I'm doing, and there will be Jews who have sincere and honest objections to what I've said because they have a different opinion. So I would not treat the Jews as if they're different from any other group of human beings.
How does one distinguish between Zionist Jews and non-Zionist Jews?
This is an ancient question. Zionism as a word is a fairly recent word, but the Zionist movement itself has ancient roots. You had Jews exiled in Babylonia. You had the exile of the Jews through the Assyrians. Jews have always been in a struggle to take Palestine, and they were never the native inhabitants of Palestine. That is a fact that's often lost on people. Jews were always a conquering and temporary force in Palestine and were never the native population. There have been many Zionist movements throughout history, ever since the diaspora began in 70 AD. All have failed. All have resulted in tragedies for the world and for the Jewish people. There are many anti-Zionist Jews who believe for religious reasons that what is taking place today is wrong. In the Talmud, in the book of Ketubot, folio 111a, it expressly states that the Jews are to do nothing to restore themselves to Palestine, but instead must live in peace in the other nations and obey the laws of those other nations, and that they are to wait for the Messiah to restore them to Palestine, and to wait for a metaphysical change in the world, which will bring all people into harmony. These Jews are known as Natura Karta, and they're primarily Jews from Hungary, ultra-Orthodox Jews from Hungary. There are other Jews who are loyal citizens in the country in which they live. There are religious Jews, there are secular Jews, there are Jews who don't view themselves necessarily as Jews. It has always been a struggle for Jewish people to define what exactly is a Jew. Is a Jew an ethnicity? Is a Jew a religion? Is a Jew a race? The Jews represent people from all over the world. There's a major split among the Jewish people from those who descended from Eastern Europeans who are known as Ashkenazi Jews, and the Oriental Jews who are known as the Sephardim. Here again, Jewish racism manifests itself. The Sephardic Jews assert that they are the superior original Jews, and that the Ashkenazi Jews are instead descended from Khazars and Scythians, and from Hittites. There have even been historical analyses which say that the Armenians are the Jews and are the lost 10 tribes of Israel. So it is not an easy question to answer in the first place, who is or who is not a Jew. Now, Zionist Jews essentially represent Russian Jews within the Pale of Settlement who took hold of Herzl's idea and wanted to form a Jewish homeland in Palestine. When Tsar Alexander was murdered in 1881 or 1882, there were pogroms in Russia. Many of these Jews in Russia fled to the United States. Millions of Russian Jews came to the United States, and it is the descendants of these Russian Jews who are the primary Zionist force in America.
How are they saying present-day Armenians are the Amalekites? And the second question, while the story says that Armenians are from America.
My awareness of the idea that Jews have stigmatized the Armenians as Amalekites comes from the book I showed you. I can also show you a slide where the Encyclopedia Judaica states that the Jews identify the Armenians as the Amalekites. It's not a controversial issue. No serious scholar would dispute it. I also have from the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia a statement that the Armenians are considered to be the Amalekites.
Why your book has not been published yet? Is there any way, any major problem in order to publish your book? Thank you.
That's a good question. I never sought to publish it other than to put it on the internet so that it could become freely discussed. I don't pretend to have told the entire history of the Armenian Genocide. My motive was instead to promote research, and I felt that the best way to promote research was to put the book out freely so that everyone could gain it in Armenia, in America, and around the world immediately and freely. I have had offers to publish it, which I have declined. I have also had offers to publish edited versions of it. There are groups who have tried to discourage me from focusing on the Armenian Genocide, and instead have tried to encourage me to the underlying theme of the threat that Zionism poses to mankind at large. But I have declined to do that.
Similar question, different conversation. Where can your book find? Where can we find your book? Or do you have any website? Thank you.
If you go on the web and you search for www.jewishracism, as if it were one word, JEWRACISM.com, you can download my book for free. You'll see it featured prominently in the center at the top of the page.
This is written in Armenian and says, is it possible that whatever documents you have and you can prepare a movie and destroy it all, I mean, distribute it all over the United States and English-speaking people?
That's one of the reasons why I came here tonight. I have been trying to encourage Armenian leaders to produce a video documentary which will expose these facts. These documents are easily available. There are many libraries which have microfilm of the London Times articles I discussed. And as I said, there are many libraries which have the multi-volume sets of Sir Gerard Lowther's reports to the Foreign Office. The information is freely available. Everything that I've written is verifiable. I provided references and sources that can be checked. And I very much encourage you to produce a video documentary, and I would also encourage you to do as I have done and to put it freely on the internet on Google Video so that people around the world can see it.
There is a
This is not a question, it's a statement. But I could not read this one, but I like to read it. Have you been contracted by the Turkish government to create tension between Jews and Armenians so the latter would stop their fight against Turks? We can laugh, but please answer the question.
I'm afraid the Turkish government doesn't take me that seriously.
It's a joke.
But I would encourage such dialogue with the Turks, between the Turks and the Armenians. I'm just one insignificant person. This is something that has to be taken over by the Armenian community. You have the vested interest in it. It's your history. All I've tried to do is provide you with a point of departure where you can begin your own research. I suggest that you establish archives and repositories to collect all the stories and information that you have, all the photographs. I also suggest that you archive all political statements made around the world in relation to the Armenian genocide. This may someday become an important legal issue, and you should have an archive which establishes all the newspaper articles and all the quotations of politicians and where they stood at each period of history. The Jews have done a wonderful job of archiving all of the information about the Holocaust that was perpetrated against them by the Nazis. I suggest that the Armenians learn from that, and since the Armenians will have that as a model, you can even improve upon it. And today we have the internet, so it will be very easy for you to accumulate all this information and to make it freely available.
Are Armenians the only nation considered Amalekites, or are there other nation, the state as well, other than Armenia?
Part of the mythology of the Amalekites is that it's a war that is passed from generation to generation. Jews have always identified enemies as the Amalekites. This creates a powerful psychological bond among Jews because they believe that the Amalekites are out to destroy them, which therefore justifies their desire to destroy another people. By calling the Armenians the Amalekites, they were scapegoating them for the Jewish desire to commit genocide and were blaming the Armenians for their desire to kill them. The Armenians are not the only people who have been identified as the Amalekites. In the Nazi era, Hitler was called Haman, who was an Amalekite leader that is related to the story of Esther. And the Germans were called the Amalekites. Today, the Palestinians are being called the Amalekites. This gives the Jews a theological basis for committing genocide against the Palestinians. It also serves as a powerful political unifying force among Jews and blinds them to the inhuman acts that they are committing against the Palestinians.
Another weird question statement. Is this a Turkish plot to make the Armenians fight on two fronts, Turkish and Jewish?
I'd like to say a couple of words because it's the time to talk. Սիրելի
Արազատներ, մինչև հիմա երբ զիոնիզմը մեր հետ եղած է, ինձ մեկ անգամ պատմության մեջ ասեք, ով որ գրի այսպիսի բաներ, դարբեր հաշիվներ ունի. Ամերիկայի կոնգրեսի մեջ ես 35 տարի միացյալ նահանգները, ով կխորինեցուց հայկական ցեղասպանությունը, ամեն անգամ հրեական լաբին, բայց ինչ հարցում է, քաղաքական տեսակետ է, քաղաքական հասունություն չունեցող մարդի. Նրանման հարցումներ, ես ինքնաթիռ վախ չունի, թափանցիկ քաղաքականությունը, ասկի անկեղծ չեք կնարելացը, բայց ամոթ է ասան հարցում գարցում. Մինչ հիմա գարձ մեր բարեկամներն էին, այո, երկու ամիս առաջ, երկու հատ բեմ հանեցի վրանի խրտացի. Ամուշի դեղտրին, մեկ հատ պրոֆեսոր, ուրիշ ֆիլմարդացող. Մարդիկ ազգացին դրան վճարեցին ներկայանա։ Հայրենակիցներ, երբ մեր թշնամին եւ բարեկամ միտքնան զանազաներ իրավ են եւ ասան հարցումներ, թրկիշ պլատ չեն իրերին։ Իրենք արդեն ներթեր են, բարեկամներ, documentation,
տասնյակներով հիմքեր, հստակեր ինչ էր իմա ագանչ դիվարկը պսպսային, իմա հրաբարական եկ ընկը խոսինք, դժվար է մարսել, կմարսեք բարը, թողինեք կարպատարնան, թե ինչ հրատեն մեզի, մենք ամշնալիք պանչունին, հիմա եկած եմ գսենք, որ բարեկամ մեր գպավել, մեր ուսեն բարի չէ, զգեցեք մեր տան ճամպան է դարդում։
But still you have the choice to answer this Turkish question. I said that the
there are so many questions, I know, but
I oppose the idea of people fighting one another. I'm trying to expose what a disaster it is when people fight one another. I'm trying to encourage people to unite with one another to the benefit of all of humanity.
We have through history, we have been good to Jews. Why Jews hate Armenians?
There are Jews who have a very racist attitude towards all non-Jews. And this is promoted by Judaism itself, which says that Jews are the chosen people of God and are destined to rule over all other peoples. Jewish religious mythology teaches the Jews that they have the right to treat other people with a double standard. The laws which apply to Jews do not apply to non-Jews. Jews in the Talmud are permitted to kill non-Jews without punishment. That is just one of the many racist aspects of Judaism. It is not that Jews even developed a hatred of Armenians. Jews in the Ottoman Empire were in competition with the Armenians. The Armenians were known as very intelligent people and very good businessmen. Jews wanted to eliminate that competition. They also wanted to ensure that the Ottoman Empire would fail because they wanted to break it apart into small nations. One of the ways that they could ensure that the Ottoman Empire would fail was to kill off those who kept it alive. It was the Armenians who kept the Ottoman Empire alive and were therefore an obstacle to the Jewish plan to destroy the Ottoman Empire. In addition, as I said, they used the massacre of Christians, not just Armenians, but Greeks and Assyrians and other Christian groups as well, in order to provoke the Balkan Wars, which they knew and hoped could lead into the First World War, which would be the war that would ultimately destroy the Ottoman Empire and destroy all of the empires and lead to the League of Nations and petitions as to how the Ottoman Empire ought to be broken up, where they could petition for a Jewish state.
Have you received threats for writing your book?
I haven't received any specific threats for having written my book. I have received death threats for exposing Zionist crimes throughout history.
How closely did the Armenian political parties cooperate with the Young Turks, and did this cooperation contribute to the Armenian genocide?
The Armenian revolutionary groups were very idealistic people who believed that they could create a new utopian society, and that if the Armenians were sacrificed in this way that the Zionist Jews proposed, that this would lead eventually to the formation of an Armenian nation. There were Armenians who also wanted to partition the Ottoman Empire into small nations so that they themselves could form an Armenian nation. One such man was Reverend George Filion, who wrote in 1895, long before the genocide occurred in 1915, that millions of Armenians would be killed, and that this would serve to create a new messianic era where the Armenians would become the chosen people of God. Reverend Filion also predicted that Sultan Abdulhamid II would be overthrown. He also predicted that Kaiser Wilhelm II would be overthrown and that Tsar Nicholas II would be overthrown. He made these predictions in 1895, many years before these events took place. He also predicted the First World War, and he said that this would be the Battle of Armageddon, which would instigate the end times of Jewish prophecy. There is no way that this man could have known any of these things, let alone all of these things collectively, unless he had foreknowledge. This leads to the inevitable conclusion that many Armenians in the church and in the revolutionary groups betrayed the Armenian people on the pretext that it would ultimately lead to the formation of an Armenian nation. We also have a terrible betrayal of Armenians by an Armenian named James A. Malcolm, who was a Persian Armenian. He was perhaps a crypto-Jew, I have no proof of that. But he created a plan among the Zionists in England to bring America into the war against the Germans. The American president, Woodrow Wilson, was under blackmail from Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. He had had an illicit affair with a woman named Mrs. Peck. During this affair, he wrote several letters to Mrs. Peck, which she kept. Woodrow Wilson made a promise to Mrs. Peck that if his wife should die, he would marry her. She threatened to sue him when he broke this promise when his wife did die and he married another woman. Two Zionist lawyers approached Mrs. Peck and said that we will pay the money that Woodrow Wilson owes you if you forward to us those letters. These are historical facts confirmed by Mrs. Peck herself. These Jewish bankers then had Woodrow Wilson under blackmail because they had the letters from this illicit affair. That is how Louis Brandeis, the most disreputable lawyer in American history, became Supreme Court Justice and the first Jewish Supreme Court Justice of the United States. James A. Malcolm, a Persian Armenian, came up with the idea that these Zionist Jews could be used to bring America into the war if England promised to give Palestine to the Jews at the conclusion of the war. This is why the Balfour Declaration was issued in November of 1917. This was a contract established between the Rothschild family and the British government that if they promised to give Palestine to the Jews at the conclusion of the war, that the Jews would bring America into the war and rescue England. England at that time stood to lose the war. Many French were defecting and the Germans were gaining territory, and it appeared that Germany would win the war. The reason that this is such a vile act of betrayal is this deal that Herzl made with the Sultan to cover up the massacres of Armenians. Theodore Herzl was the primary Zionist, and this Armenian promoted Zionism, which led to the massacres of the Armenians. And it is because of his contract that Zionism was ultimately successful. One of the things that Zionist Jews did to destroy the Ottoman Empire was to promote the idea among Turks that they should have nationalistic pride. The Ottoman Empire owned a great deal of territory, and this was a trap in order to make the Turks believe that they would be better off if they surrendered their empire and became nationalistic. So they suckered the Turks into destroying their own empire in the name of Turkish pride. Atatürk promoted the ideas which were popular among Jewish positivists in Vienna and Paris, that Turkey should become a modern scientific society and that science should replace religion and that society should be organized in a scientific way for the benefit of all classes of people. Atatürk promoted secularism and Atatürk attacked Islamism. The Turkish military has since taken over this role that Atatürk served. the Turkish military threatens any Muslim leaders that they will be executed if they try to return the Turks to nationalistic pride and to Islam. Now that sounds like a contradiction. As I just said, he promoted nationalistic pride. But the nationalism that Ataturk promoted was European and modern. It was not traditional Turkish culture. Just as in all communist societies, they immediately tried to destroy the indigenous culture, Ataturk destroyed the indigenous Turkish culture. You have the same thing happened in China with Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution. Today, the military of Turkey sits as a military dictatorship and poses a real and imminent threat to any leaders who try to reestablish Turkish culture and who try to reestablish Islamic roots in Turkey and to turn Turkey from alliances and control by Zionist Jews to its natural position as a leader in the Islamic world. We recently had elections where Muslims did gain significant advances in politics. This is a very dangerous situation, and the Turkish military, which is led by crypto-Jews, is threatening to wipe out the current Turkish government, as they have done many times in the past. They have in the past gone and executed the leaders of Turkey and deposed leaders of Turkey.
What do you think about the Treaty of Lausanne?
I haven't researched it, so I have no comment.
Please give the audience a summary of your academic credentials.
I graduated summa cum laude from Regents College of the State University of New York. I've written many books and articles about the history of the theory of relativity, and my books and articles have been picked up by academic journals and peer-reviewed books around the world and have instigated great controversies, which have led to the production of video documentaries and have led to academic disputes. The leading physicists in the world are split. Some come to my aid and have co-authored papers with me. Others vehemently disagree with me, but none has presented any substantive criticism of anything that I've written.
As a historian, but not a political analyst, what do you think would be the
reparation of the Armenian genocide? What should be, when do you think a reparation of Armenian genocide between of the lands?
There can be no reparations for the deaths of 1.5 million people. The important thing for Armenians to do is to ensure that this genocide ends, that the depopulation of Armenia, which is deliberate, and that the economic destruction of Armenia, which is deliberate, end. That, I think, is the way that you can try to obtain some justice for those who were murdered. But there is no real justice for that murder.
Great Lexus blocking a car. 5TAL484.
Mr. Gürkins,
thank you for this
wonderful lecture. God bless you, and most probably pretty soon the people is going to ask you to come back and give us another lecture. God bless you, and God bless you.
սիրելի առազատներ, ձեզ մեր շատ շնորհակալ ենք, ձեր լրջության, ձեր համբերության համար, շատ շատ շնորհակալ ենք, լուրը տարածեցեք, հայ ժողովուրդը ուշ տեղանուխ պիտի հասնե, Սասունցի Դավիթը պիտի արթնա, և Ավետյանց երկիրը ուշ տեղանուխ մեր պիտի ունենա, եթե Հայաստանի վայրը ունենա.